This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Scott McWilliams. How are you, Scott?
Good, Chris. How are you, mate?
Not too bad, not too bad. One of the things I want to talk about today is sort of where Australia at is now. For the last couple of podcasts, we've sort of looked at the history of Australia and what's been going on there, particularly with regards to your wines as well. And maybe this week we'll have a look at the future. And I think one of the interesting markets is China.
It is such an important market, Chris, especially for Australians.
China is rapidly becoming one of Australia's main export markets. I don't think it's quite the main one yet, is it? It goes America, China, and then the UK.
Very close. Yeah, I'm not sure of the actual order, but I know that China is growing absolutely rapidly. And look, I was just there. Only a week and a half ago, Wine Australia had a big road show and a big push. Mm. And for McWilliams Wines, it's in fact one of our strategic focuses.
Yeah.
There is 48 million wine drinkers in China. And, you know, when I think of that in terms of the population of Australia, you know, it's nearly double.
Yeah.
People go, wow, that's a lot. And I'm thinking, well, is that all?
Yeah, at the moment.
At the moment, yeah. So, I mean, that was an increase of 10 million wine drinkers from last year. You know, if things keep going the way the predictions are, you know, Australia's proximity to China, mm-hmm. the free trade agreements that we have now in place,
yep.
China is our number one focus without a doubt.
Do you think the free trade agreements, because we've been monitoring them here from here a wee bit, and we've been seeing that the duty's been ratcheting down on Australian wines over time as this free trade agreement kicks in. And when we look at sort of some of the volumes now, I think Australia's replaced France now as its major importer of wine, or it's pretty close to
replacing France. It's close to it, yeah. It's still number two to France, and certainly in value.
Yeah. But it's getting there. It's getting there. Do you think this free trade agreement has made a big difference to you guys?
Absolutely.
In terms of just because it's more cost competitive, your wines, or?
And then other factors like the austerity laws. So the Chinese had were big crackdown on corruption and so wine was used a lot as a currency for the those business dealings, shall we call them, and it was always French products, so all of the very high end French products were used I guess as business gifts, maybe you could call them. Now that stopped a lot. The overall spend, this is what I'm hearing anecdotally, is that the overall spend has dropped dramatically. And so all of a sudden, all of the Australian products are in the price point that now is being focused upon by the locals there.
Because the Australian currency, how is that faring up? Because that's a, I always think, if you want to know what wine you're going to be drinking in 6 months' time, which wine producers had their currency collapse most recently? It takes about 6 months, and then all of a sudden you find you're drinking South African Pinotage or Chilean Reds or Argentinian Malbecs, because their peso's dropping now. So Argentinian wines are going to become popular in the UK very shortly, or more popular.
Sure. Yeah, it is an interesting dynamic, and to see also the effect that a US president can have on on an industry like our own. It's fascinating.
Well, how's that happened?
Oh, we're seeing some of the decisions for placing tariffs on industries, because of a decision that Donald Trump has made has upset a market space, and tariffs get slapped on and things like that, which opens the door for other suppliers from other regions. When all of a sudden becomes a lot more cost effective or more competitive and feasible to be doing business. The wine industry is so fluid, and this is one of the more difficult things I really struggle to get my head around, is how quickly it moves at the consumer level, mm-hmm. versus how quickly we can try and attempt to make it from a production level. Because it takes 3 years to plant a vine to make it into something, a plant that will produce fruit that's suitable for winemaking.
Yeah.
It's hard to move quickly with the fashion of the retail space in that regard.
No, that's true. All right, just before we finish up, I was looking at some of sort of the things about McWilliams. I noticed you're a member of the Australia's First Families, which was created what?
2009.
Yeah, 9 years ago. So what exactly is that? Because I've seen a bit of that. There's a group in New Zealand, there's a group in England now who have done a similar type of thing.
Yeah, so the Australia's First Families of Wine is 12 Australian wine families who had to meet a set of criteria. And we've joined forces originally as a marketing collaboration, but it's become a bit bigger than that now. Mm-hmm. And I've really been involved heavily from what's called the next generational point of view. So there's the dads, as we call them, because these patriarchs of family businesses are mostly males. That is changing, thankfully. And then the next generation's coming through, which I still consider myself young enough to be part of. And so AFFW, the goal is to join forces and to create exposure for A, Australia, B, Australian wine, and C, our own wine.
Yeah.
So we tour through our important markets, and generally that would be US and Canada or UK or Hong Kong, China. And so when we get together as 12 famous names in a room, you know, it's quite an appealing thing to do, and people have a great appetite to come and join in a masterclass when you've got 12 family patriarchs sitting on a stage showing their best wines or something that they've unlocked out of the cellar.
Yeah.
I won't rattle through the names because I'm bound to miss one.
I've seen like the obvious ones are things like Hinschke, Derenberg,
Yalumba, Brown Brothers.
De Bortley's in there as well, isn't it? So there are, you know, there's some pretty big names here.
Sure. We recognise the fact that we could collaborate. And like I said in the past, we're a medium-sized business and we have to duke it out with the big boys. So when we have a few other friendly businesses holding hands, so to speak, we have much more market presence.
Yeah, that makes sense. And the last thing I just want to touch on is from a wine investment point of view, you don't necessarily think of Australian wines as a sort of A-grade wines, apart from maybe Penfolds Grange and that Hinschke Hill of Grace, are probably the two I always think of as probably investable styles of wines. But one of the retailers over there, Langton's, do a sort of a list of the top graded wines for investment and the next tier and the next tier. And you guys are in there a couple of times.
We're one of the few wine
Penfolds
businesses.
Is everywhere.
Yeah, sure. But we're one of the few businesses that has more than one listing on the Langton's classification. And so our Mount Pleasant estate, which is pretty much the jewel in the crown of the whole McWilliams Wines business, Mount Pleasant was named James Halliday Winery of the Year 2017, mm-hmm. which is out of roughly 2,600 wine businesses in Australia. That's the highest accolade you can achieve.
And yeah.
We got that last year. And so that's in the Langton's classification. And you talked about, you know, the perception of Australian wine perhaps being, you know, tarnished by all of the bulk entry-level wine that you see on the shelves today. And yes, I think there is a bit of a glass ceiling for us. But, you know, our wines are world-class. On that Langton's classification, we have a Semillon from the Hunter Valley, the Semillon grape variety being from Bordeaux, and ours is called Lovedale, the Lovedale Semillon.
Yeah.
And we put that wine up against a famous Bordeaux white. The Bordeaux white was 30 times the price, and we sat down, a whole lot of journos, MWs, the like, in a room, and we did a side-by-side tasting. It was agreed that both wines were absolutely fantastic, superb, and fairly much on par with each other. It's just the price difference.
And also, Lovedale as a style is a slightly lower alcohol style usually.
Absolutely, yeah.
So it's a bit lighter and style. It's the Aussie answer to a lighter style of
correct
of wine.
That's correct. So, look, Australia makes world-class wines, and we can be up there with, in my humble opinion, personal opinion, we can make wines that will equal some of the best of the old world regions and the new world regions. It's just that we don't have the reputation, which is strange because we've got some of the oldest vines in the world. We had a Chardonnay from our Hamwood Estate range, which is probably selling on shelf for no more than £8, maybe. So we entered a wine which would retail here for about £7. We entered it into a French wine show, which was and this was just the Chardonnay variety wine show. And the wine got up in the top 10 wines of that whole show. You know, and it really does show that you don't have to spend a lot of money to get a really high-end wine.
No.
You just need to sort of, you know, do your research, work it out and find that. So Australian wine really has a bit of a stigma to shake. And this is you know, something where regionality and where McWilliams Wines is focusing on that new on-trend, cool climate style, you know, wines of, you know, complexity through sophistication and finesse. This is what we're seeing is getting a lot of attention. Also, alternate varieties, we're seeing that happen too.
Okay. What was the other wine? You've talked about Mount Pleasant. What was the other one in the Langton's ranking?
Yeah, so that was the Mount Pleasant Maurice O'Shea.
Oh, so they're both Mount Pleasant.
Yep.
For listeners, we interviewed Phil Ryan, I think his name is, isn't it? Phil Ryan from Mount Pleasant. He's the chief winemaker there.
Yeah, Phil was. He's retired from our business, but we still love Phil very much. He's still a big part of what we achieve, and he's been a big part in the development of the Maurice O'Shea wine.
Yeah, because we interviewed him probably, it was one of our earlier podcasts, maybe 10, 12 years ago sort of thing. So we've done a whole series looking at the whole range, and also what I found quite interesting is watching, you know, because Mount Pleasant does release the same wine multiple times over a period of years.
Yeah,
you can actually get a similar style of wine, a Semillon that's quite young, and then compare it to a virtually made identical. Hopefully, if the vintages are similar, you know, you'll end up with a wine you can actually see the aging of Semillon quite clearly, which is quite nice to see.
Yeah, yeah. It's, you know, this market here in the UK has been very, very happy to look at styles like a Hunter Valley Semillon, which is very unique to the wine world.
Yeah.
And we currently sell a 2009 vintage. So we've got a 9-year-old Hunter Valley Semillon in market at the moment.
Yeah.
And we're very confident in selling that here because it's a bit more of a sophisticated market.
yeah, possibly. But I always think of Hunter Valley Semillon in the same ballpark as sort of some of the better German Rieslings.
Absolutely. Because
they're just... they're not quite fashionable, but you can get a lot of bang for your buck.
True, yeah. They're a real wine geek wine too.
Yeah,
don't let that put you off trying them. It's just the wines, you know, they're dry wines, as in there's no residual sugar. They're low in alcohol as a result of low sugar in the grape when they're picked, and so the alcohol level's hovering around 10 to 11%, which is significantly lower than standard. Yeah. Wines, and being acidic, they're a very peculiar style, and they, when they're young, they're a little
closed.
They're a little closed and unapproachable to everyday wine drinker. But when they're older, people actually can see them. But then at the same time, people might be a bit scared to spend their money on a white wine that's so old because they think, oh, it must be no good.
Yeah, especially with the alcohol being quite low, because you normally think of higher alcohols give you, for red wines anyway, give you more tannin and colour and ageability sometimes.
Oh, I definitely disagree with the ageability on high alcohol reds, because I think we've seen now enough decades of Aussie reds that were 15 plus alcohol that in fact look fantastic when they're young, but they fall over with 10 years.
Yeah.
But these old... aged Semillons a real treat. Anyone who's getting into wine, you know, the Institute of Masters of Wine, you know, run obviously their MW program. They have in that exam a tasting component, and the McWilliams well, I should call it the Mount Pleasant Estate Lovedale Semillon 2011 was in the 2018 MW exam.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, because it's in there because it's a completely different style.
But the nice thing about it is it's a very recognisable style as well. So if you know a Hunter Valley Semillon, you can normally pretty much spot it. Which is what Master of Wine's like, to be able to taste the wine and go, that's from there.
Yeah, that's right, that's right.
Just jumping back to China, you know, you're talking about the different grape varieties. What's going on there in terms of grape varieties or styles, etc.?
Chris, it's a really interesting market because traditionally red wine has been the choice of drink, and that's not because they like red wine as such. It's just red is a lucky colour.
Yeah.
And, you know, the old... joke of
and also the premium wines were all red as well, the super premium wines that were given as gifts, as you're saying earlier.
Absolutely, yeah. So the old joke of putting a bit of cola in the red wine, you know, that did happen.
Yeah, no, I believe that.
You know, Bordeaux first growth watered down with Coca-Cola or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, well, I do with bourbon, so yeah,
that did happen. And what I'm seeing these days, Chris, and I've just, as I said, come from China a few weeks ago, is the younger generation are really bucking the trend of the old traditional older generation. And they're really engaged and really enthusiastic about all wine styles. So we did a roadshow with Wine Australia, and one of the most surprising things that a lot of the producers that were on the roadshow noticed was the attention on white wine. And drier, crisper styles of white wine, which is so much more, you know, conducive to their cuisine.
Yeah, yeah.
So it just sort of made sense. It was this weird paradox that they had their food style, and then they were choosing to drink, you know, something that was tannic and extracted, and that just seemed like a mismatch. But the younger generation in China is so much engaged on food and wine pairings. And the wine styles about balance in wines. You know, it's not just a case of turning the bottle around to look for the alcohol level and, you know, let's choose the one with the highest alcohol. It's different these days. And the younger generation are really engaged in China on good value for money. And this is where the Australian industry can really hit some home runs, because we've got value for money propositions, which, you know, a lot of people here in the UK or back home in Australia would talk about entry level. But over there, they're still aspiring sort of price points for the Chinese.
Yeah. And so some anyway.
That's correct. So middle income, shall we say, for China are still aspire to buy a bottle of wine, which we would spend way less than 10 quid on over here, or 10 Aussie dollars even at home.
Mm.
Yeah, so wine style's changing in China, and that's having a very big impact on what all wine producers are doing. We're also keeping a very close eye on their own production.
Yeah.
The Chinese produce just as much wine as the Australians do.
No, they produce more. It's just sixth little, biggest producer in the world.
It flipped only recently.
Yeah.
Yeah, Australia was six recently, but it's only flipped just recently. Yeah, that's the latest figures I've seen from Wine Intelligence.
Yeah, they're a big producer of wine.
They are, and they're getting a lot better at it too.
Not the ones I tasted. I went to the MW Master of Wines, and they had a quite a big range of sort of Chinese wines there, the Institute of Master of Wine, and they were doing a tasting, and I tasted a load of Chinese wines. First time they've done tastings in the UK of Chinese wines, and they were passable, but there was still a lot of problems.
I agree. I've seen some dodgy ones, but it's not because they're not trying hard.
Oh, no, and they'll get there.
They're going to get there. Yeah, they'll be there very shortly. I've seen how they get there in other industries. They will get there. So we're keeping a close eye on China.
Yeah, I would too. I think they, particularly if, because the land they're using, or some of the land they're using, is quite remote for some of their production, which means the cost of land's cheap, the labour will be cheap, and if they've got access to water, then they can really compete quite hard.
That's right. And they've got the climates and the soil types to match nearly anywhere else in the world. So, they're a big force. And not only are we looking at China for our own opportunities in selling our own wine, but we're looking at China and what they're doing with their own industry and how fast that's evolving.
Yeah. All right, mate. I think we're going to wrap it up there. Thanks for your interviews. They've been absolutely brilliant.
Our pleasure, Chris. And anyone looking for my wines, McWilliams Wines, yep. Also our flagship Mount Pleasant. We've just done a relaunch in the UK, and we're very excited to still be here in market.
Okay, where do you get the... Because when I came back from Mount Pleasant years ago, I was like, oh, great, I like these wines, because I quite like Hunter Valley Semillon as a style. But it was really hard to get anything over here. I think they maybe were exporting the Lovedale, but they weren't exporting the Elizabeth. The Lovedale's the youngest one, isn't it? And then the Elizabeth, and then they've got the...
They're varying ages. As you know, we do age releases. And... You know, I guess to where to find them in the UK, we're distributing through Notria & Co. So their website might be able to help.
Okay.
And if you have our own website up, you know, you can just drop a comment there and we'll work out a place to find our wines for you.
Brilliant, mate. All right. Cheers, mate.
Thanks, Chris. Cheers. Bye.